Here we go.
Nick Anthony.
All right, 866-543-6990. OWW Radio at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com. radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com. As promised, Dan Hodge is on the line with us, man. Can you believe it? Daddy Hodge himself is on OWW Radio right here at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com. onlineworldofwrestling.com. 8-time NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion. 1-time NWA North American Champion. 3-time. And wait till you hear this about his collegiate career at amateur wrestling. He was a 3-time NCAA champion. Also silver medal in freestyle wrestling at the 56 Olympics. And the 58 Golden Gloves Boxing Champion. Dan Hodge, Daddy Hodge, joining us here at OWW Radio. Daddy, thanks for being a part of OWW Radio. Welcome to the show.
Nick, it's my pleasure.
Also, your agent Tom Demos is on the line.
Hey, Nick, us. How you doing?
I'm doing just swell, man. Thanks a lot for you guys coming on, and I apologize for yesterday, but you guys can understand that, yes?
Yeah, definitely. Sorry to hear about that.
Oh, thanks, man. Let's start right away with your very impressive, Dad, very impressive, I have to say, amateur wrestling background. You were a collegiate wrestler for the University of Oklahoma, where you, incredible record, man, 46-0 with 36 pins. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but you're the only man in the history of the NCAA to never be taken down from a standing position.
Yes, sir.
Now, when did you become a fan of amateur wrestling, and when did you start training?
I started wrestling amateur in the 8th grade in 1947 here at Perry.
Mm-hmm.
And wrestled through high school, and of course, like I said, a lot of people didn't know my background.
Mm-hmm.
So my home burnt down, and my mother was burnt very bad, and had 52 blood transfusions, and I don't know how many skin grafts. And
mm-hmm.
I was kicked around to aunt, uncle, granddad, and never quite fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I went by the gym one evening, and I thought they were playing basketball and there's wrestling here in high school in Perry. Mm-hmm. And so I went out on Monday, and Friday they took me to the junior high state tournament. Not that I made the team, but just as a body, because the boy that was to wrestle there, Robert Jondro, that was going to wrestle there,
mm-hmm.
went to FFA in Kansas City, so they just took me.
Mm-hmm.
And I took third place, and I was so proud of that little medal, I hung it down on a chain.
I bet.
Like a watch bob. So I said, well, you know, wrestling a week this year, next year I win it. Next
mm-hmm.
year I won it.
Wow.
And now, of course, I'm already staying at the fire station
uh-huh.
and working at the Conoco station every night.
Okay.
After school till 10 o'clock. Then weekends, every Saturday and Sunday was from 8 in the morning till 10 at night.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to wrestle for Perry.
Wow.
And so
Perry's a little town in Oklahoma,
right.
About 6,000 people,
okay.
which Danny still resides in, never left.
Wow. You're like a town hero there then, huh?
Well, it's the wrestling capital of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Perry has won more state and national champions than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think we got 36 state championships.
Wow.
And nobody's come close.
During your time at University of Oklahoma, you won 3 NCAA championships. Do you recall some of your toughest competitors from that time? Do you ever run into any of them in the professional ranks?
I had one young man from the University of Oklahoma, Dale Lewis, wrestle professionally.
Mm-hmm.
But I never dreamt of going there. Dale Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrestled at the University of Oklahoma, and of course never taken down, never lost, and then after that, I got a job in Wichita, and I thought, well, this is super. They asked me if I would like to box. Mm. Well, I had never boxed or had gloves on. Mm-hmm. I'd had several scrimmages here on the street with the Air Force from Enid,
mm-hmm.
but and never lost one. But
little street fights, huh, Danny?
Pardon me?
Little street fights going on.
Yes,
right?
Sir. Don't come back next Saturday.
So you, so you were 40. You were 46-0 in college, and in your boxing career, your amateur boxing career, you were 17-0. But before I get to your boxing, the Dan Hodge Trophy is the amateur wrestling trophy equivalent of college football's Heisman Trophy. What an honor that is, for crying out loud. How do you feel about being a namesake of this prestigious award?
I feel very honored that they chose me. You know, they've had a lot of wrestlers. They said, well, nobody's done what you've done, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back and I wondered how that I went through wrestling, never taken down, never lost, and to this day still have the highest pinning percentages of anyone.
Geez. Yeah.
And I'm hoping that a young man will come along and beat my record while I'm still living.
Wow.
You know, records are made to be broken, but this is something. And then when I went into the boxing, I made the Olympics at 19 just out of high school in 52. Went to Helsinki, Finland, and got fourth. Mm-hmm. And, of course, 56, I got a silver medal.
Right.
And made it both freestyle and Greco-Roman. But I let a young man that I like, Jim Peckham, wrestle the Greco-Roman in Melbourne, Australia, so he could make the trip. And he was a great young man.
Dan Hodge joining us here on OWW Radio, a true icon in the professional wrestling, amateur wrestling, boxing. I mean, the list just goes on with this man. He's joining us here on OWW Radio. All right, into your boxing career. You are an accomplished boxer. As I mentioned, completed an amateur record of 17-0, for crying out loud, 12 knockouts before moving on to the professional ranks, where you tallied up to you went up to 8-2, I believe. What made you decide not to pursue a career as a boxer?
I Nick, that's beautiful if you ask that. I wanted to make a living at a sport. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, wrestling, in boxing, I'd never lost one in the amateurs.
Right.
And incidentally, I knocked everybody out but one in the amateurs. And then I turned pro, and the 8-2, I never got paid.
Ah.
And I said, I can get all the fights I want here in Perry, Oklahoma for nothing.
Right.
And I don't have to train near as hard.
Right.
And so I said, well, being I'm a professional, I can't go back to Olympics in 59, I turned pro.
Mm-hmm.
So then in October of 59, I went into professional wrestling. And I figured, well, there, if you want to fight, you're going to come out second. If you want to wrestle, you're going to come out second.
Wow.
So I said, and like I said, the wife shared me with the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I was determined to show the fans what an athlete was.
Which you certainly
and
did.
It didn't matter which way you wanted to go. I was happy.
Eesh.
And I trained for the fans.
Wow.
And I, like I said, Nick, I just thank you for bringing me on here, the world of wrestling, for the fans today. Maybe they'll have some questions for me.
Right. Now, you were...
Let me tell you something, Nick. Now, when he got into pro wrestling, wasn't told that, to go easy. So he would hurt everybody. Nobody wanted to wrestle him.
Wow.
For quite a long time.
Now, did you hurt anybody professional wrestling?
Yes, I did.
But they told you not to go easy, so I mean, it wasn't your fault.
Nobody told me nothing.
Now, you were also one of the earliest.
Wait, before,
go ahead.
Before you go into that, okay. Rocky Marciano wanted to buy out his boxing contract.
Wow.
And and then Rocky Marciano died in a car accident, I believe, wasn't it?
No, it was a plane crash.
Plane crash.
Newton, Iowa.
Right. I also heard a story about Elvis, but we'll get into that a little later on. You were one of the earliest mixed martial artists. Have you followed the growth of that sport? Did you ever think about becoming a coach of MMA fighters, anything like that?
I'm thinking about maybe starting a school for some of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I wished it had been around in my time because I never lost in wrestling or boxing.
Uh-huh. So you would have tackled that sport as well, huh?
It was to make a living for my family, yes.
Wow.
Danny would have loved it. And, I mean, we go over it every now and then, and he shows me moves. And, you know, I've been training pro wrestling and black belt in karate, and he shows me moves that I've never even seen before. So Danny, as a coach, that's why we started a team, Danny Hodge, hopefully get into that. I mean, he could revolutionize, you know, ultimate fighting right now.
Wow. Now,
And I'm the chairman of the Boxing and Wrestling Commission of Oklahoma.
Yes.
Brock Lesnar. His WWE career. Did you watch his career in the WWE?
I watched it also.
What about his UFC career?
It's been super.
Wow.
And like I said, he's you know when you enter into the MMA, you have to take him out as quickly as possible. And back when I started boxing professionally up in New York, Sugar Ray Robinson trainer George Gameford, I was training in his gym at 138th and Broadway, and he said, Dan, every punch adds up. And so I wanted to try to knock everyone out in the first round.
As soon as you can.
And the amateurs, it went that way. Lewis Coleman from Chicago, at the Tournament of Champions in Chicago, was the only one I didn't knock out. And Fred Hood in the Nationals in Madison Square Garden in 58, the odds were I wouldn't even show up in the ring. And they had the two pair of gloves. They had the golden gloves and the red golden gloves. And they gave him the golden gloves, and I said, I want those. They said, well, he's a favorite. I said, what do I get? They said, well, the winner will get both pair of gloves plus an automatic Hamilton watch, and the loser will get a wine type. I said, tie them dudes on.
Wow.
And this is the first round, Nick. It's amazing. I don't know where there's no films of it. But I came out, and I'm looking over at him, and it's so smoky you can't see in Madison Square Garden. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying.
Cigar smoke
was everywhere.
Okay.
And I could barely see him, but he came out and threw maybe 8 or 10 jabs. None of them hit me, just the air hurt. And so we traded a couple of punches, and I brought my right foot up to hit him with a hook, and he hit me on the top of the forehead, and I done a complete somersault in the ring.
Wow.
First knockdown that I've ever been in. And, of course, the crowd says, woo! And I'm embarrassed. And, of course, the referee came over and he said, I had to take an 8 count. And, of course, Fred is over in the southeast corner of the ring. I'm in the northwest corner. And he was dancing kind of like I say they do over Stillwater.
Okay.
And that made me a little bit angrier. And so I caught him over in the middle of the rope on the south side, and I hit him with a hook, and he went down. He just melted, and they pushed me back, or they told me to go to the neutral corner. Well, I looked around. They pushed me back a couple steps, and they pushed me again, said, go to the neutral corner. Well, I didn't even know where my corner was. And I got back, and they got the count of four, and the bell rang. The first round is over. Now, they dragged him back and set him on the little stool, And I'm thinking, please don't get up. Please. And he got up, and just as he come out, he threw a jab. And I thought, do that again. And just as he did, I hit him with the right in the stomach and the left hook and the right so hard that he flew out between the second and top rope.
Oh, wow. Get out of here.
Outside.
Wow.
It's probably maybe 23 seconds in the second round. Wow. And I don't think it's that long.
Wow.
And anyway, they came with the gloves. Mr. Hodge, wait a minute, what's changed here? Are you going to take one of his gloves and give him one of yours, which is customary?
Uh-huh.
Danny was the underdog, you know.
He was the underdog in the whole fight, huh?
Right, right.
I said, no, sir, I want both pair.
Mm-hmm.
So those golden gloves are in the National Wrestling Hall of Fame at Stillwater.
Wow.
And the red gloves has got lamps made out of them here at home.
Okay.
So that's where the gloves are at.
Dan Hodge joining us here on OWW Radio, the legendary Dan Hodge. 866-543-6990, radio at online, worldofwrestling.com. Now, you say you followed Brock Lesnar, Dad. What did you think of his heel promo, if you saw it, after the defeat of Frank Mir to become the undisputed UFC heavyweight champion? What was that, a month ago, I believe? Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get to watch a fight then?
No, I haven't. I haven't got to see a lot of them.
All right. All right. Well,
Brock's going to take off. It's just as long as he listens to his coaches, and it's just going to take some time.
Uh-huh.
You know, but the guy is 280 pounds of pure muscle, and, you know, excellent wrestler. He needs to learn some karate skills and and submission moves and hooks and he should be fine as long as he listens to the coaches.
Well, Dan said it earlier in the interview where he said, you got to take these guys out as soon as you can. Just like in a street fight, you're not going to be wasting time doing jabs. You're going to do what you can to get this fight over with because eventually it's going to get real brutal, and you want to be on the giving end instead of the receiving. So
exactly.
I completely understand what Dad said earlier in this interview, and it relates to UFC, in my opinion. Now, Strikeforce recently promoted a fight at 145 pounds for the very first women's championship in mixed martial arts. What do you think of this step forward for MMA, and do you think that Dana White, the president of UFC, who has denied interest before, might cave and promote a women's division in the UFC?
Oh, there's no doubt it's coming. You mm-hmm. see, in amateur wrestling, there was no lady wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
And they started a large group down by Amarillo. And I think probably 8 years ago, when Perry was wrestling down at the Texas Shootout,
mm-hmm.
They had the 8 teams down there. And they had some girls wrestling girls. And so as Perry wrestled all 8 schools and beat all of them, and like they were a little 2A school, it's 3A now.
Mm-hmm.
But the girls were going through, and I got to hand out their awards. I handed out the boys' awards and the wrestlers, and then I got to hand out the girls' awards. And the lady said, well, that's the greatest honor they could have ever had. And I felt so honored and so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd show them some holds. This is what I enjoy, having the kids come up and Mr. Hodge, what about this? What about that?
Mm-hmm.
Get in shape and get ready. You know, this is the key to all of your sports. And believe in yourself.
Right.
And I had no one here in Perry.
Right. With saying that, have any current wrestlers or any wrestlers in the last 10 years or so, have they been in contact with you to pick your brain a little bit?
Yeah, I have clinics every year
mm-hmm.
for kids. And, of course, there's one young man from Perry, a big boy. I don't know if you know Jack Swigert.
Oh, Sure, I
do. Jacob Hager from Perry.
Mm-hmm.
Was our WWE.
Yeah.
Right.
And like I said, I had a lot of talks with Jake, and we've made several appearances. We've worked out, and I showed him, you know, a lot of things. And he's a super young man.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, and they still come from the little town of Perry.
Wow. He has a great amateur background as well, doesn't he?
He does. He can fortify wrestling.
Yep. Yep.
And like I said, there was some of the wrestlers in my time was great wrestlers. They had started the hard way, you know, the carnival, taking on all comers.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Briscoe brothers. Briscoe brothers, who we want to give a shout out to. We want to give a shout out to Jerry Briscoe too, because as you know, he had surgery and he's a good friend of ours. So
Jack
sure
and Jerry
okay.
Were super athletes,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when I have clinics, I show you hooks or what I would do.
Right.
First of all, I would block. I would take you down,
mm-hmm.
And from there, I would not get between legs,
hmm.
Because you scissor me, you stretch me out from you,
mm-hmm.
And I can't use knees. My approach would be a lot different because you would be wounded.
Yeah. I mean, Nick, you gotta see it to believe it. He showed me some things that are just unbelievable, you know. And he just it just comes to him. He's a natural born athlete, you know.
Right.
And it hurts too. It hurts.
Now, Dad, you entered the sport of pro wrestling in '59 after training with one of the most influential figures in the history of the sport. Ed Lewis. Everyone's heard horror stories, I mean, about the training wannabe wrestlers had to endure in those days. What was Lewis' training regimen like? Do you feel any good, or do you have any good stories or memories about the Strangler?
Oh, Ed Lewis spent his last 2.5 years with me,
mm-hmm.
Traveled with me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Mr. Lewis was 2020 South Cincinnati, he and his wife.
Yeah.
And he's even came over and ate at my house here in Perry.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask him about this hold or that hold. He said, well, my boy, in my day, I would do this or I would do that.
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Lewis, you got to picture this.
Okay.
He had $100, which was like $5,000 today,
mm-hmm.
for anybody that would get behind him. He was a counter wrestler.
Okay.
And in fact, I've got his wooden head with the six Rolls-Royce lifter springs in it.
Okay.
It's in the museum in Stillwater. I carried it with me 5 years on the road professionally, to Japan and everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Sumos tried it. Everybody. Then they'd throw it at me, and I'd shut it, and they'd look at me.
Wow.
And. Like I said, the headlock was the famous hold in the old times. And once you get that, you can't get out.
Mm-hmm.
But wrestling has revolutionized a lot since the old days.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you do this or you do that. And so he would give me ideas how to get in a hold or get out of a hold. Mm-hmm. And what a thrill it was for Mr. Lewis to choose me. He traveled with Lou Thesz for 8 years.
Wow. You were also trained by the co-owner of the legendary Mid-South Wrestling, right?
Leroy McGurk.
Yeah, you got it.
Leroy McGurk, yes.
Mm-hmm. How was it? What's some fond memories of working with him, having him trade you for Mid-South?
Well, Leroy would tell me a different host. Leroy was blind,
mm-hmm.
if you remember. You know, he got his eye cut in a car wreck, and he had one eye and had glaucoma and one eye taken out, and he had a car wreck and the other eye was gone.
Hmm.
And he was blind, but he could see more at the matches than you and I could watching.
Wow.
just from what he heard people saying.
Mm-hmm.
He knew exactly what was going on.
Mm.
So he promoted wrestling a lot here.
And you know what I think would happen, Nick, there, mm-hmm. is you know, he didn't want anybody to steal Danny away from him. And I think Danny could have had more of an opportunity, you know, with all the different promotions, but Leroy kind of kept him, uh-huh. you know, kept over a watch over him, mm-hmm. and, you know, kept him in the Mid-South area. Otherwise,
And I bet Danny was very loyal to him as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So otherwise, I mean, Danny would probably be known like Ric Flair is today, you know, with all the territories mm-hmm. back then. So.
Now, Dan, you wrestled in the early days of the territory era. What was it like wrestling in one promotion for a time, then moving somewhere else for another territory? How was that whole experience?
It was great for me because I was in shape for the fans, and I didn't care what you did. You could do anything you want. I'm going to counter you quickly.
Yeah.
And in fact, Buddy Monroe had beat Matsuda for the belt,
uh-huh.
and I wrestled him for it, and I took him over in a headlock, and he laid there, bless his heart.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd been out the night before a little late and a little long, and. So I would turn him loose, and if you don't move, I'm going to stomp you.
Wow.
You are going to wrestle.
you made people
you
better.
You see what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. You made people better. So you stay out all night. You're not going to have a bad match with me and make me look bad.
Hey, I'm not going to be silly.
Right.
And one of the great, great young men was Hiro Matsuda.
Mm-hmm.
1 week, he had beat all the opponents in 5 different states, and I had to wrestle him every night.
Wow.
90 minutes.
Mm.
And the first night, I got a fall, and he got a fall.
Mm-hmm.
The next night, and 90 minutes run out. Next night, he got a fall, and I didn't.
Right.
90 minutes. Next night, I got a fall, and he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
The next 2 nights, there wasn't even a fall in the 90 minutes of wrestling.
Wow.
That's what kind of conditioning Hiro Matsuda was in.
Wow.
And yourself.
The great programs they have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, who were some of
you? And you know what? I could have went another 90.
I bet. Who were some of your favorite promoters to work for back then?
Well, one that wasn't my favorite was Tennessee Nick Gulas.
Uh-huh.
It was always very bad.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I first went down there to wrestle for him. When I went in the dressing room, just as I went by, he swung and hit me on the back so hard, as hard as he could.
Mm-hmm.
The hair up on my arm stood up.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over and set my suitcase down on the ring and on the edge by the bench, and I come back and I shook hands with Nick and I squeezed him, and he had a big ring on.
Wow.
And I mashed his ring shut and cut his fingers, and he's dancing in front of all the boys. And I said, Nick, don't hit me.
I don't know if you knew Nick. Let me just cut in here real quick, Danny.
Go ahead.
But
yep.
Danny used to break pliers with his, you know, just he just, you know, he crushes apples.
Yeah, I know about the apples.
They can do that.
Right, I know about the apples.
But pliers.
Wow.
In fact, the owner of the hardware store in Perry used to get mad at him because he'd break all his pliers, showing people how he could do it, you know?
Right.
So his handshake, even still today, is murderous.
Wow. Now, I heard about the apple situation. I never knew about the pliers. So you went up to Nick, and you shook his hand and cut his finger with the ring.
I squeezed his hand.
Right, you squeezed his hand. I say, cut? Yeah, you squeezed his hand with the ring, and you cut his finger.
Oh, yeah, both fingers on both sides and mashed the ring.
Wow.
And, of course, my booking the next 2 weeks was Murfreesboro, Kentucky, or little towns.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't care. Don't hit me.
Wow.
And I had better matches in the little town than they had in Nashville.
Mm-hmm, the bigger ones.
And yeah, so So, like I say, what a pleasure it was for me. I'd get out and I'd have you get down in referee's position, which is on your hands and knees.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would turn you over with an Olympic throw.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would get down, and you would have an opportunity to get me off my hands and knees. Well, after three or four times they couldn't, then they would kick me.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got the advantage for a minute. But you wasn't going to turn me. And you probably won't push me backwards.
Right. Dan Hodge joining us here on OWW Radio. Now, Dan, there was a time when your name was synonymous, man, with the junior heavyweight division, not just in America, but worldwide. You not only hold the record for most reigns as NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion with 8, but your reign of 1,450, which happens to be your first reign with the title, also makes you the longest reigning champion of all time. You not only toured and headlined all over U.S. and Japan, but during your time as champion, you looking back, what was life like on the road, both in Japan and here in America?
Well, for example, in 58, I went to Japan, and I had a chance to wrestle the great Luthez again.
Mm-hmm.
I had many matches, time run out, and draws, and I wrestled him over there for the TWWA International Heavyweight Championship in the Corrigan Hall and the Sumo Palace in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And I beat Luthez for the TWWA title. And then 2 weeks later, I'm wrestling a tag team match with Wilbur Snyder, and we're wrestling Giant Baba and Antonio Noka,
mm-hmm,
in Hiroshima, and we win the TWWA Heavyweight Tag Team Championships. So I held all of them.
Yes, you did.
So you see what a pleasure it's been for me in Japan, and Tom will tell you, there's no secrets over there.
Oh, no.
They know where you're at all times. All times.
Dan, even to this day, is Elvis in Japan.
I bet, man.
It's just amazing. Yeah. I was so amazed. We had such a great time.
Well, he's Elvis over here. Oh, well, he's the professional wrestling Elvis over here for us, and in the collegiate world as well.
True, very true. Just different types of fans in Japan. You know, they bring in presents,
mm-hmm,
and of course, they didn't know who I was. You know, and then they found out I was a pro wrestling manager, and they start bringing me presents because I was with Danny, and you know, it was a riot. You know, they waited for us while we ate dinner for 2 hours. Fans
two
waiting
and.
Yeah, two
and
a half hours
of waiting.
Wow.
Took us back to our hotel room. It was just unbelievable.
Okay, now Dan, you won your first NWA World Junior Heavyweight Championship from Angelo
Savoldi,
right? How long did you feud with Savoldi last, and what do you recall about winning your first major title there?
Well, July 22nd, 1968, I wrestled him. I wrestled him before that, and it was back in October, mm-hmm, and they had a Angelo and I was boxing, and Angelo had tied me up in the ropes and was kicking me.
Okay.
And Angelo had made a statement that he said, well, hey, I'll kill Danny Hodge, his father, whoever.
Uh-oh.
And, well, you don't tell my dad you're going to whip him because he's going to look for you.
Yeah, okay.
You don't know my family.
Uh-huh.
So he slipped in the ring and cut Angelo on the back and arm twice.
Oh, wow.
Danny's father came into the ring.
Uh-huh.
And when I get out of the ropes, I see all this stack of people, and uh-huh, they're just like stacked on top, just trying to hold him down.
Mm-hmm.
And Hanson Bay was going to run across and kick him in the face. Well, my dad only has one eye anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I hit him, and he went out through the ropes.
Ooh.
And I said, Daddy, what are you doing here? And they got up. Of course, they took him to jail.
Right.
Went down and visited. He says, well, hey, you're not going to tell me you're going to do something because it's going to happen. I grew up in the old times here back when Oklahoma was the first state. So
I hear you.
What a thrill it was for me.
Mm-hmm. Is it true that you just mentioned it right now? But your father was taken to jail. Whatever happened after that? The story's true about the stories afterwards.
Yeah. Angelo came back, and then July 22nd, 1960. This was like 3 months later. Wrestling. That's when I beat him.
Mm-hmm.
And Angelo's got more hair today than I had when I was born. he's a beautiful person, a great wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
I admire him, and he said, Dan, he said, I'm not pressing charges against your dad.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got 144 stitches in my leg and butt. They cut my leg right straight across.
Mm-hmm.
They thought they was getting another boy. And I'm in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and they call me up to want me to make a trip to Japan. Can I make it? Mm-hmm. I said, I'll be there. Well, I didn't know first week it was going to be in 5 weeks. The first week I sat at home. I couldn't hardly sit down even on the stool.
Mm-hmm.
Next week I'm out at the golf course a mile north of my house on crutches. Next week I'm walking. Next week I'm running. And then the following Saturday I'm in Japan. I changed my stance from square to you to one leg back so you didn't kick my leg open.
Right.
So what a thrill I've had.
Mm-hmm. Who was some of your favorite opponents? Was Angelo one of your favorites?
Oh, he was super.
Mm-hmm.
Had Dandy Jack Donovan. Had the Assassins.
Mm-hmm.
They were all tough. Red McKim.
Assassins.
Who was your
amateur opponent, boy out of Tulsa?
Mm-hmm.
Jack Briscoe.
Mm-hmm.
Started here, Gerald.
Mm-hmm.
God, what I could just keep going.
Who was your toughest opponent, Danny, ever? Can you compare any of them? Be the very
well, I would say Matsuda was probably the toughest in the world junior heavyweight championship, and the most skilled was Luthez.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I wrestle all of them, but the one that you should watch today would be Harley Race.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, Harley's had both hips and knees replaced.
Mm-hmm.
But in their younger days, you look out.
Yeah, Harley's a great guy. We spoke with him here on OWA Radio. Were you ever offered a shot at the World Heavyweight Championship, NWA?
I wrestled Lou probably five times for the heavyweight title.
Okay.
And every time it came out a draw.
Wow. But they never want to put the title on you?
No, this is like I said, one I already had the junior heavyweight champion.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they didn't want one man controlling everything.
Mm.
I couldn't be two places at once.
That's true.
A junior heavyweight champion and a heavyweight champion.
Okay.
So
now you...
I felt very honored just to getting to wrestle for it.
Mm-hmm. The difference between the Japanese style of wrestling and the American style of wrestling in your time, how did those parallel? How did they, how was it, man? I mean, we know about the fans, even today, that the fans are totally different in Japan than they are in America.
Totally.
They show more of a respect toward the sport than some of the fans out here in America do.
Nick, you know, first time I went to Japan to wrestle was in, like, say, 67.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrestled for Hiro Matsuda, had a promotion. And I thought I'd probably get beat over there by him because he went there early, and like I said, it's 14 hours ahead of us, time-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, you know, that he would beat me, but we had draw matches, and he didn't beat me.
Wow.
And next year I wrestled Lou and beat him. And every year I'd go over once or twice a year till I got around, like, all four seasons of the year so the fans could see me in different eras.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be over there 8-10 weeks at a time.
Mm.
But what great fans and wrestlers they have.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're in shape. They're ready.
Mm-hmm. And still to this day, it's just a complete difference. And sometimes I actually enjoy some of the Japanese style more than the American style. Do you feel the same way?
Oh yeah, it's like I said, they wrestle both freestyle and Greco. Of
mm-hmm.
course, their big wrestling is sumo.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to see some of the sumo matches. We were in the area at Tokyo Hilton Hotel, I'm watching the matches with different ones, and of course we had one referee from Canada, Fred Atkins.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone now, bless his heart, but he used to pick a sumo wrestler, and if ours lost, well, we told him that we chose that other wrestler, and he'd get mad and run out. But I got to see, and in 68, they had the first kickboxing
really?
Match from Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where your mixed martial arts started.
Mm.
And I'm watching it over there on TV in Japan.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, sir.
Hmm.
So I knew it was coming here.
Mm-hmm.
But we're almost the last to get any of these things.
Right.
But I told Fred Atkins, I said, I'd like to wrestle a sumo. He said, shut up. Push you plumb out of Tokyo. I said, yeah, but I would like to say I tried.
Right, I hear you.
One time.
Right. So
I knew that. But see, they're chosen. But when they're born, their folks starts force feeding them.
Mm.
So they're made sumo way back.
Yeah, they're bred.
Before they ever realize what they are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what workouts they go through.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine trying to push somebody around. And
big,
push them off of the dirt platform.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'd like to just say I tried it, but I didn't get that opportunity.
Well, I'm glad we had you in the professional wrestling world, man. Dan Hodge joining us here on OWW Radio. Here's something for you, Dad. Just 2 weeks after winning your 8th NWA World Junior Heavyweight Championship, and this is in 76, and you were involved in a car accident that left you with a broken neck. The injuries forced you to vacate your title and retire. Are you happy that you were able to retire as world champion, or do you think you had more to offer? Well, of course you had more to offer professional wrestling, right?
I hated, but, you know, after what was funny was when I hit the bridge, my car turned upside down, and on the roof it was going across the top of the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And each time it hit one of those square and posts,
mm-hmm.
and my teeth would break.
Oof.
And it hurt so bad, I said, God, how much more can I take? And the hurting quit, but the screeching didn't.
Mm.
Next thing you know, my car goes over underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And I stick my hand up, and I said, this is an awful way to go. And I hear it just as plain today as I heard it March 15, 76, is hold your neck. Now, how I helped my neck and got out of the car, I'll never know. And the doctor said if my neck had ever come down a quarter of an inch, I'd have been paralyzed.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, this is something, this is, it told me right then.
After your retirement, did you follow the progression of NWA World Junior Heavyweight Championship and the entire junior heavyweight division from your days to the days of Tiger Mask, Ultimo Dragon, Justin Liger, Dynamite Kid, including the prestigious New Japan Pro Wrestling J Crowd? Did you continue to follow this?
No, I was trying to. Of course, like I said, it was a while before I ever done anything. Then I started selling permanent cookware, which was made here in Perry, and the company here has cookware that I could believe in. I still have today, and if your house burns down, they give you another set, and you can't. It's permanent cookware, and you know, it's got a multi-core bottom on it. It even heat, it's just as hot on the side as it is in the middle. And I think that's one of the things that's helped me, that it keeps the nutrition in your food. You don't boil it. So, you know, I'm very proud that I was part of that. The 2 years that I sold, I had a trip down in the Bahamas, and a trip to Acapulco, and a trip to the Hawaiian Islands. And I got to take my wife and family, kids over there, all three of them. So my son, daughter, and son. And so, and I wrestled over there.
Right.
So can you see what a thrill it's been for me?
Right. You truly are blessed. Truly are blessed, man. I'm telling you. Now, your career happens to have spanned from a time in the 1950s when professional wrestling was still very close to its amateur roots. But fast forward to 1970s when some of the crowds were just starting to get in on the act and the matches began to get more choreographed and staged. Looking back, did you ever see those changes coming? And at the time, what do you think would happen to pro wrestling?
Well, you know, see, I can see these things happen. See, it don't only happen here in America. It happens worldwide. It's changing in the other parts of the world just as fast as it's changing here. So, you know, wrestling has revolutionized. And I'd ask Mr. Lewis, I said, how do you get in this hole? Well, my boy, I did this or I did that. And can you see where I'm coming from? But wrestling sometime they had a 90-minute time limit. Sometime there's no time limit. Strangler Lewis wrestled 5 hours and 30 minutes.
Wow.
6 hours and 30 minutes one night, and they stopped it for fear one or both of them would have a heart attack.
I can't even imagine that. I can't imagine that.
That's unbelievable.
But you see, they had, like I say, Ed Lewis would have a headlock. He may have it on you for an hour, hour and a half.
Wow.
And you can't get out of it.
Wow.
So it wasn't a rapid changing style in those days. It was who could beat who.
Wear your opponent down.
Yeah, exactly. And Mr. Lewis, like I said, he had a $100 bill. Anybody get behind him? And when I started, they had $5,000. Anybody stay in the ring with me 10 minutes.
Wow.
So can you see what kind of conditioning I had for the fans?
Absolutely. Because everybody,
every night, I've got a challenge from somebody. So, what a thrill it was for me! They can't even leave the ring, and I'm back in the on the stage jumping rope.
Dan Hodge joining us here on OWW Radio. Now, Dan, we talked a little bit about Elvis Presley, and you get him ready for a movie role. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, it was such a thrill. I was down in Arkansas, and I had heard from some friends that Aaron Elvis wanted me to, he was going to make a movie. A wrestler was going to steal his girlfriend, and then I was going to teach him to wrestle, and then he was going to beat the wrestler and get his girlfriend back.
Mm-hmm.
But before that happened, he passed away. But I did have an opportunity to make a movie.
I've known Danny. This is Tommy D again.
Right.
I've known Danny for a long time, and I'm still pulling stories out of him. And this Elvis story to me was just unbelievable,
mm-hmm.
you know, and amazing that Elvis Presley was a huge fan of Danny Hodges,
mm-hmm.
and of pro wrestling. And Danny can tell you about Elvis's younger years. He wanted to be a pro wrestler,
mm-hmm.
and he would help. He would sing at intermission, and what else would he do, Danny? They said he was too small.
At intermissions at Memphis and Nashville.
Right.
Every week.
They said he told them he was too small to be a wrestler, though, right?
Yeah.
So he would help put the ring together and carry the guys' clothes back to the locker room for him. I mean, just amazing.
Wow. Now, Tom, am I right when you I think this is something you wrote here that he had a punching bag for, was it Sugar Ray or somebody like that? Am I right with that?
A boxing glove.
Who are you talking about?
Danny. Danny had a run-in with Sugar Ray. Am I right?
No, Sugar Ray was way back when. When he first won the title,
mm-hmm.
I got to see the fight down in the Superdome in New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
and when he fought the No Maws fight,
mm-hmm.
and he got the title down there. So I met Sugar Ray back then, and then about 1960. He came to Perry. Lloyd Hughes, which is a friend of mine here,
mm-hmm.
Invited him here to his home and Perry to their, every year we have the Cherokee Strip celebration, the opening of Oklahoma Territory.
Okay.
And he came to Perry and so I had worked in the restaurant all night and then all afternoon, 4 o'clock, I come home and took a shower and sit down in the chair and Lloyd called me and said, "Hey, Sugar Ray wants to meet you." I says, "Well, let's bring him down." Well, there's about 50 people with him.
Wow.
So I said, "Well, I'll come up."
Mm-hmm.
So I went up, and his little wife, Juanita, his first wife,
mm-hmm.
Was there. She said, "Well, don't that hurt when they jump on you?" I said, "Get up on this chair," and I laid down on the floor, and there's probably about 250 people in Lloyd's home at this time.
Uh-huh.
And she jumped with one foot on, one foot off. I said, "No, get up here on the table and jump on me." When she jumped, I just grabbed her ankles and held her up in the air. But now she's screaming, and Sugar Ray is over right here side. He says, "Come outside." He says, "I got to have a picture with you wrestling." So we got a picture with me with a wrestling pose, and then I got one with him with boxing.
Oh, that's perfect.
So... that's what I got to go through.
Wow.
And I got to have pictures with Rocky in his office down in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Rocky Marciano.
Right.
So, and Jack Dempsey,
wow.
When I won the Nationals in 1958 in New York, I got to go to his restaurant and eat with him and have a picture with Jack. And Sugar Ray Robinson's trainer, George Gainford, was my trainer in New York.
Hmm.
And what a thrill it's been for me. I've got to meet all the greats and be around this era of wrestling and boxing.
This is true.
And so I've been in both fields.
This is amazing.
Both amateur and professionally.
Mm-hmm. Tom, this is absolutely amazing that I'm talking to Dan Hodge today here on OWW Radio, 866-543-6990, radio at onlineworldofwrestling.com. Dan Hodge on OWW Radio. Now, Dan, Vince McMahon has a tendency to induct wrestlers who've never worked for WWE into the WWE Hall of Fame. WWE's mainstay, Jim Ross, has been a big fan of yours for a long time.
Jim's a dear friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know you appeared on Raw in 2005. How well do you know Vince and J? You said you know JR very well. Have there been any talks to you about a possible induction into the WWE Hall of Fame? And would you accept that invitation?
I would accept it. I haven't even thought about it. I've been, been in so many.
Danny hasn't thought about it, but I've been trying to push it. Mm-hmm. With Vince and everybody.
Mm-hmm. Vince
and
a great friend.
Wow.
It's Vince is a big fan of Danny's. In fact, if you go to the Team Danny Hodge website, you'll see pictures backstage. Now, Vince doesn't allow pictures or cameras backstage, but when Danny Hodge walks in, it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure things just stop when Danny moves. I mean, I'm telling you.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, Toby Keith was back there, country singer.
Right.
And, he said, oh, my God, there's Danny Hodge. I got to go shake his hand. I've been a fan of his since I was a kid.
Pictures.
Wow.
Yeah. And, all the wrestlers, everybody wanted to have pictures with Danny Hodge. Mm. And Vince does not allow cameras back there. But, and you can see those pictures on the TeamDannyHodge.com website. So Vince has a lot of respect for Danny, but it's still a political deal as far as the Hall of Fame goes.
Right. Now I completely understand about the politics of wrestling and over there at WWE, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
We here at OWW Radio are big fans of the CAC, the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Yes.
Our boss here, Jason Dedridge, he's on the board. In 2007, you were honored with the Luthez Award, an award that is only given to professional wrestlers with legitimate amateur backgrounds.
Right.
Do you attend any of the Cauliflower Alley Club conventions? I was at the one in April, this past April. Any plans? Were you at any one of the conventions in the past?
I've been to several. Carl Lauer is a very dear friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy the Cauliflower Alley, but they had some matches scheduled. We had amateur wrestling comes first.
Mm-hmm.
And I attend the matches with Perry. And when I go out there, they had it in June. This is my harvest.
Mm-hmm.
Part. I drive a wheat truck for a family, and my neighbor asked me probably 11 years ago,
mm-hmm,
if I'd drive a truck till they found somebody, and apparently they haven't looked yet. So, and the neighbor retired, but what a thrill it is to help this family, mm-hmm, out. Mm-hmm. They've lost a mother and a brother, and They're still big wheat farmers, and every year they ask me if I will help. Well, hey, it's a pleasure for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Danny has some scheduling conflicts when it comes to that. Otherwise, he would definitely be at the Cauliflower Alley Club.
I think this next year, this it's back where I can go.
Mm-hmm.
The wife and I.
Right.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
How did you feel about receiving the Luthez Award?
Oh, I was so, I was so thrilled that I could even fit in those shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's so many honors, big honors that I never thought that I would ever receive from a little town of Perry, Oklahoma. And when I wrestled amateur, I represented Oklahoma. When I wrestled professionally, I represented Oklahoma, and also boxed,
mm-hmm,
Oklahoma and professionally. So what a thrill and honor it is for me, and it would be a great honor to be in the Vince McMahon's Hall of Fame in New York.
Mm-hmm. All right, you have you currently have a biography out through Culture House Books called Oklahoma Shooter. It's the Dan Hodge story. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, it's something that Nick, nobody has ever done in the history of our sport. Mm-hmm. Nobody has ever went undefeated in wrestling. And the highest pinning percentages. I didn't say the most pins, I said the highest. Mm-hmm. And then go through the amateur boxing and never losing. Mm-hmm. You know, this is unheard of. Only God could let me do these things. Mm-hmm. Then I boxed professionally and wrestled professionally. I wanted to make a living in my sport. Right. So I had two sports to go at. I didn't get paid in one of them. Mm-hmm.
And as we learned,
the book was written by Mike Chapman, who has the wrestling museum. Mm-hmm. What's it called? The International Wrestling Institute, mm-hmm. and museum. And he's written 19 books. So you know, he was a big fan of Danny Hodge, and mm-hmm. you know, wanted to tell his story, which I'm glad finally somebody did. And it's definitely a must read for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Oklahoma Shooter: The Dan Hodge Story, of course, available through Culture House Books. Can they go to the website to pick that up, Tom?
Yeah, they can go straight to teamdannyhodge.com. Mm-hmm. And you know, you use PayPal or a credit card, whatever they need, and it's the order will go straight to Danny, and Danny will autograph it to the person who buys the book.
Go ahead. How much interaction did you have with Mike Chapman? How much influence? Oh, I'm sure you had a lot of influence on it, but the final product, how much influence did you have?
Mike has knew all of my life. In fact, he and Big John, way back when, he came down here. He drove all the way down. He and Big John come down to my house. He walked through my house into my den, mm-hmm. and the first question he asked me, Danny, does sleeper work? I said, yes, Mike, it does. And his reply was, put it on me.
Wow.
Well, Mike will tell you now, he's seen a twinkle in my eye. And so I put Mike to sleep and laid him down on the floor, and he snorted a little bit. And then Big John said he wasn't asleep, so Big John was a heavyweight. So I put him to sleep, and he kicked and hollered, and my kid watched him and said, boy, they're funny.
Oh, man.
But that was, Mike said, I had to know if it worked. I said, yes, it does, Mike. Mm-hmm. I said, in fact, I used to go around and put $100 in your hand, mm-hmm. and it's yours if you're not asleep in 30 seconds.
Wow.
So, you know, I know that I'm going to get my money back.
Uh-huh.
I know. So, you know, this is what I had for the fans is they want to see it. It will work. Mm-hmm. And like I say, there's a lot of things that's dangerous, but when I was wrestling, I wanted to find a way to hook you and beat you as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And then there's times that I would play with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My mom always told me that you're never lucky. And listening to your story for this whole hour on OWW Radio, I can say that, no, you weren't lucky. You were completely blessed. And my mom always told me this. You're never lucky. You're blessed. Dan Hodge joining us here on OWW Radio. What a life you've lived. I can only hope that listeners listening in on OWW Radio are inspired or encouraged by listening to you here on OWW Radio. Dan Hodge joining us for the entire hour here on OWW Radio. 866-543-6990, radio at online, worldofwrestling.com. I want to thank you so much, you and Tom both, for giving us this hour.
Mike, thank you. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, no, Nick, we appreciate it, you know, and I wanted to get, Danny's lived, you know, such a blessed life, and he's such a humble guy, and he's a superstar, but he didn't have it easy growing up. I mean, everything that happened, he made happen with no help from people. And, you know, it just shows all the kids out there, if you work hard and you know, do what you need to do, you can get somewhere. And that's what Danny's life is all about.
And to add to that, Tom, even today, he's still so humble, helping his neighbors out, doing his part.
Exactly.
I can't believe this. This is great.
I know. It's just amazing, you know. And he's like family to me, and I'm here to protect him and promote him at the same time. And he doesn't realize what a big star he is and what a big influence on people, you know.
And that's what makes him the person that he is.
Exactly.
Nick, I want to thank you very much for having me on your World of Wrestling interview.
Mm-hmm.
What a thrill it's been for me, and to all the wonderful fans that's listening today and calling their friends and tell them that what a story what a life I've had.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. For more information,
thank you.
No problem. For more information on Danny Hodge, and to order an autographed copy. Am I correct? Autographed copy,
yep,
of Oklahoma
autographed
Shooter.
Copy.
The Dan Hodge,
yep,
story. Visit the official website, TeamDannyHodge.com. Is that correct, Tom?
That's absolutely correct. And that'll go right to Danny, and he will autograph it and send you a copy of the book.
All right. Tom D, Danny Hodge, here on OWW Radio. Guys, I want to thank you so very much again for coming on. God bless.
God bless.
Thanks,
you.
Nick.
This is Danny Hodge, and you're listening to OWW Radio.
OWW Radio.
All right, OWW Radio, radio at online, worldofwrestling.com. You hear the music for this week in wrestling history. Long way to the top if you want to rock and roll. Dave, Caveman Cave, go ahead, man.
All right, Nick, thank you. This weekend wrestling for September 14th, 1997, WCW holds Fall Brawl War Games at the Lawrence Stowell Coliseum in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Highlights of that card included the Steiner Brothers defeating Harlem Heat when Rick Steiner pinned Booker after a German suplex. Jeff Jarrett defeated Dean Malenko by submission with a figure four leg lock. Wrath and Mortis defeated Mang and the Barbarian. The Giant defeated Scott Norton after a chokeslam. Lex Luger and Diamond Dallas Page defeated Scott Hall and Randy Savage. The NWO, Conan, Bagwell, Nash, and Six defeated the Four Horsemen, Flair, Hennig, Benoit, and Steve McMichael after Hennig turned on the Horsemen and McMichael submitted to stop the beating that Ric Flair was receiving from the NWO. In 1998, on this day, Billy Kidman defeated Juventud Guerrero for the WCW Cruiserweight title in Greensville, South Carolina. Guerrero would win the title back from Kidman on November 16th in Wichita, Kansas. And in 1970, Satoshi Kijima is born in Koto, Tokyo, Japan. Move on to September 15th, 1996. WCW holds Fall Brawl at the Lawrence Stowell Coliseum. Diamond Dallas Page defeated Chavo Guerrero on the card. Ice Train defeated Scott Norton in a submission match when he forced Norton to submit with a full Nelson.
Yeah.
Chris Benoit defeated Chris Jericho. Rey Mysterio Jr. defeated Super Kalu with a Hurricane Rana to retain the WCW Cruiserweight title. Harlem Heat defeated the Nasty Boys to retain the WCW World Tag Team Championship. The Giant defeated Randy Savage after Scott Hall and Kevin Nash attacked Savage. And Team NWO, Hollywood Hogan, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and NWO Sting defeated Team WCW, Lex Luger, Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, and Sting in the War Games match when Lex Luger was forced to submit to NWO's Sting's Scorpion Deathlock, while Hogan also applied a reverse pinlock at the same time, I guess, and he gave up. 1997, Curt Hennig defeated Steve McMichael for the WCW U.S. Heavyweight title in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hennig would hold the title until December 28th when he lost the title to Diamond Dallas Page in Washington, D.C. And in 2000, on September 15th, Men's Tejo, I think I said that right, defeated Trent Acid for the vacant Combat Zone World Junior Heavyweight Championship in Tokyo, Japan. Tejo would hold the title until May 4th, 2001, when he lost the belt to Jun Kasai in Sapporo, Japan. September 16th, Harley Race defeated Pac Song in the tournament final for the Missouri heavyweight title in St. Louis. This would actually be the first time the title had been active since 1955, and Race would be the first champion to hold it. Race would hold the title until January 19, 1973, when it was defeated by Johnny Valentine in St. Louis. 1999, Vince McMahon defeated Triple H for the WWF heavyweight title when Steve Austin interfered on McMahon's behalf. McMahon would vacate the title the following week on Raw. Triple H would regain the title on September 26th in a six-pack challenge that included, Davey Boy Smith, Big Show, Kane, The Rock, and Mankind. 1960, Philip LaFond is born in Montreal, Canada. And 1997, Dick Bulldog Brouwer died of diabetic complications at the age of 63.
All right. Wait a minute.
September 17.
Who is Philip LaFond?
Phil LaFond?
Yeah.
Remember, it was the two guys that were in the WWF for a while, the two Canadian fellows. One was French, one was Canadian.
All right.
He's wrestled as Don Perfette.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of their tag team name. I know who they are now. Okay.
Yeah.
Man, what is their name?
That's him.
They wrestled at Survivor Series 97 with, God, who did they wrestle with? I don't know. It was some big elimination match with Vader and Bulldog. Yeah.
Amon Johnson. Was Amon Johnson there?
All those guys.
Yeah, I think he was there.
I don't know if Amon was in there.
He wasn't?
Yeah, he was. It was him and his partner.
No, we're talking about Amon Johnson. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry, Dave.
September 17th, 1981, Ric Flair defeated Dusty Rhodes for his first NWA Heavyweight Championship in Kansas City, Missouri, when Flair, doing his usual, was working on Dusty's leg the majority of the match, trying to soften him up for the figure four. And at one point, Flair went to the top rope. Rhodes jumped up and caught him from the ropes and attempted to suplex Flair from the top rope.
Wow.
His injured left leg gave out, and Flair fell on top of him to get the pin. Flair would hold the title until June 10, 1983, when he was defeated by Harley Race in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
1982, Harley Race defeated Dick DeBruzza for the Missouri State Heavyweight title and would hold the belt until January 23, 1983, when he lost to Kerry Von Erich. 1995, WCWA holds Fall Brawl War Games at the Asheville Civic Center in Asheville, North Carolina. On the card, Johnny B. Badd defeated Brian Pillman. Disco Inferno defeated Joey Maggs. Alex Wright and Eddie Guerrero wrestled to a no contest. Diamond Dallas Page defeated the Renegade to win the WCW World Television Championship after Page caught Renegade with the Diamond Cutter. Harlem Heat defeated Bunkhouse Buck and Dick Slater to win the WCW Tag Team Championship.
Yeah.
Arn Anderson defeated Ric Flair after Anderson hit a DDT on Flair. The Hulkamaniacs, Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Lex Luger, and Sting defeated the Dungeon of Doom, Kamala, Zodiac, Shark, and Ming in the War Games match. 2000, WCW holds Fall Brawl at the HSBC Arena in Buffalo, New York. This was the last Fall Brawl by WCW as they were purchased by the WWF in March of 2001. Yeah. Highlights of this card: the Misfits in Action defeated Three Count. The Harris Brothers defeated Chronic in a First Blood chain match. The Filthy Animals, Big Vito, and Paul Orndorff wrestled the Natural Born Thrillers to a no contest in an elimination match when the match was stopped because Orton suffered a stinger. The match would resume the following night on Nitro with Rey Mysterio winning the match. Shane Douglas and Torrey Wilson defeated Billy Kidman and Medusa in a scaffold match. Lance Storm defeated General Rexon to retain the WCW U.S. Heavyweight title. Elix Skipper defeated Kui Wee to retain the WCW Cruiserweight Championship. Booker T defeated Kevin Nash in a steel cage match to win the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. In 2001, the W Boys... I don't remember that one either. 2001, the W Boys... Oh, you do remember watching. See, I don't remember a lot of WCW, but I didn't watch a whole lot of it because I just didn't like storylines. September 17, 2001, the Dudley Boys defeated Kane and The Undertaker for the WWF Tag Team title in Nashville, Tennessee. They would hold the title until October 22nd when they were beaten by The Rock and Chris Jericho in Kansas City. And 1963, Masahiro Chono is born in Seattle, Washington, believe it or not.
Chonies.
September 18th, 1956, Mary Lillian Ellison, a.k.a. the Fabulous Moolah, defeated Judy Grable in the tournament final for the WWF Women's title in Baltimore, Maryland. Moolah would hold the title from 1956 until July 23rd, 1984, when being defeated by Wendy Richter at the Brawl to End It All. 1994, WCW holds Fall Brawl at the Roanoke Civic Center in Roanoke, Virginia. Kevin Sullivan defeated Cactus Jack in a Loser Leaves WCW match. Vader defeated Sting and the Guardian Angel in a Triangle Elimination match. Johnny B. Badd defeated Lord Steven Regal to win the WCW World TV title. Steve Austin defeated Ricky Steamboat by forfeit to win the WCW U.S. Heavyweight Championship when Steamboat could not compete due to a back injury he suffered that actually ended his career. Austin would face Jim Duggan for the title, who ended up beating Austin in 35 seconds. Team Rhodes, consisting of the Nasty Boys, Dusty Rhodes, and Dustin Rhodes, defeated the Stud Stable, Terry Funk, Arn Anderson, Bunkhouse Buck, and Colonel Robert Parker in the War Games match. 1995, Marcus Bagwell and Scotty Riggs defeated Harlem Heat for the WCW World Tag Team title in Johnson City, Tennessee. They would hold the title until September 27th when they lost the belts back to Harlem Heat. In 2003, Brock Lesnar defeated Kurt Angle for the WWE SmackDown Heavyweight title in Raleigh, North Carolina. Lesnar would go on to hold the title until February 15, 2004, when he was defeated by Eddie Guerrero in San Francisco, California.
Yeah.
2003, Los Guerreros defeated Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin for the WWE SmackDown Tag Team title in Raleigh, North Carolina, the same night. They would hold the belts until October 23rd when they lost the belts to the Basham Brothers. September 19th, 1980, the Grappler defeated Ted DiBiase for the Mid-South North American title in Shreveport, Louisiana. He would hold the title until June of 81 when he was defeated by Jake the Snake Roberts in New Orleans. 1993, WCW holds Fall Brawl War Games at the Astro Arena in Houston, Texas. On the card, Too Cold Scorpio and Marcus Bagwell defeated the Equalizer and Paul Orndorff, and Scorpio pinned the Equalizer. Ice Train defeated Shanghai Pierce by pinfall. Cactus Jack defeated Yoshi Kwan by pinfall. Lord Steven Regal defeated Ricky Steamboat by pinfall to win the WCW World Television Championship. The Nasty Boys defeated Arn Anderson and Paul Roma to win the WCW World Tag Team Championship when Knobs pinned Roma. Rick Rude defeated Ric Flair to win the WCW International World Heavyweight Championship. The match was originally an NWA World Championship match, but the WCW withdrew from the NWA on September 1st. And in the War Games match, Sting, Davey Boy Smith, Dustin Rhodes, and the Shockmaster defeated Sid Vicious, Vader, and Harlem Heat when Shockmaster forced Booker T to submit with a bear hug.
You know, I was actually just thinking about this one. I used to have that tape, and back in 2003, We had moved away for about a year, and we moved back. When we moved back, I lost the tape. And so here last year, I looked on eBay to see if I could find another one, and I bought that probably at a yard sale when I was like 3 years old for like probably $5 or so. I found one copy on eBay, and it was selling for over $500.
Whoa.
$500 for that?
Yeah, for that.
Wow. I think it's just a tape of a pay-per-view.
I mean, I wanted it back, too. Cause
that's a lot of money.
Yeah. So I wasn't paying for that. But
I'll talk to you after this week, Sigmund. Maybe I'll help you out with something.
All right. Sweet.
That's 1999, ECW holds Anarchy Rules at the Odeum Expo Center in Villa Park, Illinois. On the card, Nova and Chris Chetty wrestled Simon Diamond and Tony DeVito to a no contest. Yoshihiro Tajiri defeated Super Crazy and Little Guido in a three-way dance when Tajiri pinned Crazy after a brainbuster. Just Incredible defeated Sabu by pinfall after delivering a That's Incredible on a steel chair. Tommy Dreamer and Raven defeated former OWW radio guests Steve Corino and Rhino to retain the ECW Tag Team Championship with Dreamer pinned Corino after a DDT.
Yeah.
The match was originally supposed to be Dreamer and Raven against the Insane Clown Posse, but the Insane Clown Posse no-showed the event. Rob Van Dam defeated Balls Mahoney to retain the ECW World TV title by pinfall after hitting his five-star frog splash. And Mike Awesome defeated Masato Tanaka and Taz in a three-way dance to win the ECW World Heavyweight title.
Okay.
In 2000, Mike Rapata, a.k.a. the Colorado Kid, defeated Jerry Flynn for the NWA World Heavyweight title in the tournament final in Tampa, Florida. Rapata would hold the title until November 14th when he was defeated by Sabu, also in Tampa. 1960, Genaro Vasquez Neverez, a.k.a. the Blue Panther, is born in Gomez, Palacio, Durango. To wrap up the week of September 20th, 1993, Shinya Hashimoto defeated the Great Muta for the IWG Heavyweight title in Nagoya, Japan. He would hold the title until April 4th, 1994, when he was defeated by Tatsumi Fujinami in Hiroshima, Japan. 1997, WWF holds one night only at the NEC Arena in Birmingham, England, with 11,000 people in attendance.
Yeah.
Highlights of the card, Hunter Hearst Helmsley defeated Dude Love. Vader defeated Owen Hart. The Headbangers defeated Savio Vega and Miguel Perez to retain the WWF Tag Team titles. The Patriot defeated Flash Funk. The Legion of Doom defeated the Godwins. Shawn Michaels defeated the British Bulldog to win the WWF European Championship and became the first ever Grand Slam champion, having also held the WWF Championship, the Intercontinental title, and the Tag Team Championships previously.
Mm.
Bret Hart defeated The Undertaker by disqualification to retain the WWF Championship in the main event. 1999, Mankind and The Rock defeated The Undertaker and The Big Show for the WWF Tag Team titles in Houston. The New Age Outlaws were winning the belts from them just 3 days later on September 23rd in Dallas, Texas. And 1950, Greg the Hammer Valentine is born in Seattle, Washington. And 1958, Martin Anthony Lund, a.k.a. Arn Anderson, is born in Rome, Georgia. And that is the week in wrestling.
All right, Dave K. Man Cave with the week in wrestling. I think that about rounds it up for us, don't you guys think?
Think so.
All right, I was doing some reading, and it appears to be that this guy, Philip LaFond, he's a WWE locker room legend. That's what Wikipedia is saying. August 11, 2009, he was on the SmackDown taping in Edmonton. Philip was approached by many of the up-and-coming talent in the WWE for advice on different things in the industry. To even personal life. So there you go. I guess he...
Yeah, he's wrestled all over the world.
Yeah, man. I'm looking at his online World of Wrestling bio at onlineworldofwrestling.com. That Survivor Series
match... I remember his partner's name now. It's Doug Furness.
Doug Furness, man. And Phil LaFond. They won that Survivor Series match, the debut in the WWF.
Yeah, it was
WWE
one of those two that got the win.
Yeah. So there you go. All right, that's about it. Chickfight.tv, clickwrestle.com, online, worldofwrestling.com, online, worldofwrestling.com, that is the website. OWW Genesis is the OWW radio forum. That's where you'll find all of us there. The producers, Scott, NDX, Dave, Caveman, Cave, The, Aaron, Kendrick, TNA, Scott, I mentioned Scott, Shooter. Corey Barrow and Shockey Daniel, the Truth Wade also. Thank you guys for listening. Next week, what are we doing next week? Botchmania, I think. Let's find out. Tune in to radio at onlineworldofwrestling.com. Onlineworldofwrestling.com. Also, send us an email at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com. 866-543-6990. 866-543-6990 is the telephone number. Till next week, we're out of here.
Like sand through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives.
It's been one hell of a ride, hasn't it?